Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Coddling of the American Mind is a 2018 work of social criticism and popular psychology by First Amendment lawyer Greg Lukianoff and social psychologist Jonathan Haidt. Expanded from their widely discussed Atlantic essay, the book examines changes in American universities and youth culture that the authors connect to rising anxiety, declining resilience, and conflicts over speech. Its central claim is that many adults, institutions, and cultural habits have unintentionally taught young people ideas that contradict both ancient wisdom and modern psychological research. The authors call these ideas the Great Untruths, centered on fragility, emotional reasoning, and moral division. Rather than treating campus controversies as isolated political disputes, the book places them within broader developments such as overprotective parenting, reduced unsupervised childhood play, social media, and political polarization. Its purpose is partly diagnostic and partly practical, arguing that education should prepare young people to handle disagreement, discomfort, and complexity rather than shield them from them. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the three great untruths as a framework for cultural diagnosis. The book is organized around three claims that Lukianoff and Haidt regard as damaging lessons absorbed by many young people. The untruth of fragility suggests that exposure to stress, disagreement, or emotional discomfort makes people weaker. The untruth of emotional reasoning encourages people to treat feelings as reliable evidence about reality. The untruth of us versus them frames moral life as a conflict between good people and evil people. The authors argue that these ideas are not merely inaccurate, but also harmful because they reverse principles associated with cognitive behavioral therapy, liberal education, and moral maturity. In their view, a person becomes stronger through manageable challenges. Clearer thinking requires testing emotions against evidence, and democratic life requires recognizing complexity and opponents. The value of this framework is that it links seemingly separate campus practices, including demands for protection from offensive speech and rapid moral condemnation, to a common psychological pattern. The framework is also controversial because it compresses diverse social conflicts into a small set of ideas, but it gives the book a clear analytic structure. Secondly, safetyism and the shift from physical harm to emotional protection. One of the book's most influential concepts is safetyism, the elevation of safety, especially emotional safety, into a dominant institutional value. Lukianoff and Haidt distinguish reasonable protection from physical danger from a broader expectation that institutions should prevent distress caused by words, ideas, or disagreement. Their concern is not that emotional harm is imaginary, but that treating discomfort as danger can intensify anxiety and weaken the habits needed for intellectual growth. In universities, they argue, safetyism can conflict with the traditional purposes of education, which include debate, exposure to unfamiliar ideas, and the disciplined testing of beliefs. If a claim is judged mainly by how unsafe it makes someone feel, then inquiry becomes harder because disagreement can be interpreted as injury. The book connects this tendency to trigger warnings, safe spaces, disinvitations, and formal complaints over expression. Its reasoning depends on the idea of anti-fragility, the claim that human beings often develop capacity through graduated exposure to stressors. For the authors, excessive protection may therefore produce the vulnerability it tries to prevent. Thirdly, childhood overprotection, lost play, and weakened independence. The book does not treat campus culture as something that begins at college. It traces part of the problem to changes in childhood since the late 20th century, especially the decline of unsupervised play and the rise of more intensive adult supervision. Lukianoff and Haidt argue that children need opportunities to negotiate conflict, assess risk, make mistakes, and solve social problems without constant adult mediation. When childhood becomes highly managed, young people may arrive at college with less practice handling ordinary friction and uncertainty. The authors connect this pattern to a cultural emphasis on danger avoidance, in which parents and schools may restrict independence even when actual risks are lower than feared. Their reasoning is developmental, rather than nostalgic.
Bah!
They claim that free play teaches practical judgment because children must set rules, repair disputes, and tolerate frustration in real time. This argument broadens the book beyond debates about speech codes. It suggests that resilience is not produced by lectures alone, but by repeated experience with challenge, responsibility, and bounded risk. The authors see restoring independence as a necessary complement to mental health support. Fourthly, social media, status pressure, and rising adolescent anxiety. Lukianoff and Haidt give particular attention to the arrival of smartphones and social media during the lives of the generation entering universities in the 2010s. They argue that digital life changed adolescents by increasing social comparison, public performance, reputational anxiety, and the speed at which conflicts spread. The book is cautious about presenting social media as the only cause of mental health problems, but it treats it as a major amplifier of vulnerability. Especially when combined with reduced independence and greater polarization, online environments can reward outrage, simplify moral judgment, and make social exclusion more visible and continuous. For young people, this means that peer evaluation may no longer end when the school day ends. The authors also link digital culture to campus dynamics, where accusations, protest, and reputational consequences can rapidly escalate. Their concern is not simply screen time, but the social architecture created by platforms that quantify approval and make conflict performative. This part of the book connects psychological distress to institutional behavior, showing how private anxiety and public moral conflict can reinforce each other. Lastly, free speech, viewpoint diversity, and the purpose of higher education. A central institutional argument of the book is that universities should protect free inquiry, even when expression is offensive, unsettling, or unpopular. Lukianoff brings a civil liberties perspective, while Haight adds a social psychology account of group polarization and moral reasoning. Together, they argue that higher education depends on viewpoint diversity because knowledge improves when claims are challenged from multiple directions. If campuses prioritize emotional comfort over open debate, they risk narrowing intellectual life and training students to respond to disagreement through avoidance or punishment. The book does not claim that all speech is equally valuable or that harassment should be ignored. Rather, it emphasizes the difference between targeted misconduct and the expression of ideas that some listeners find disturbing. Its practical recommendations include teaching students principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, encouraging charitable interpretation, strengthening due process, and helping young people engage across ideological lines. The authors present free speech not only as a legal principle, but as a developmental tool. In their view, students learn resilience and judgment by confronting arguments, not by being insulated from them. In conclusion, Decoupling of the American Mind is best suited for readers interested in education, youth mental health, free speech, parenting, and the cultural conflicts surrounding universities. Parents may find its discussion of independence and unsupervised play useful for thinking about how resilience is formed before college. Educators and administrators can use it as a framework for evaluating policies that aim to support students while still preserving intellectual challenge. Students may benefit from its explanation of emotional reasoning and its defense of engaging with difficult ideas rather than treating disagreement as personal danger. The book stands out among works on campus politics because it combines legal concerns about expression with psychological arguments about anxiety, development, and moral cognition. Compared with more partisan critiques of political correctness, it offers a broader causal account that includes parenting norms, technology, institutional incentives, and polarization. Compared with general self-help books on resilience, it applies psychological concepts to public institutions and democratic culture. Its limitations are also worth noting, since some readers will think it underestimates the role of discrimination or structural power in campus conflict. Even so, its influence comes from connecting personal fragility, educational practice, and civic discourse in a single accessible argument. If you would like to support Greg Lukianoff, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.